purpose of this meeting is to interview two of our architectural firms that applied to us for the proposed town hall fire station project. And the notice of this meeting was posted at town hall and on the town website June 23rd, 2016. We are missing one council member who is excused because he had surgery yesterday and he is still in bed.
Could you vote to excuse him?
Can yes. I have a motion?
I move we excuse Joe due to his recent surgery.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. And we have another council member who is stuck in the rain on College Road, but I'm sure we'll be here any minute. Okay. Now then,
well, I just talked to my wife who is in town and it's getting washed away.
If I were her, I'd stay there until it's over.
No, she's in a department store.
Oh, danger.
Go to the women's section and get some pillows. Yes. Okay, our first interview is with Oakley Collier. And see, I haven't met you guys like some of our staff have, so you will have to introduce your group here.
Okay.
And then give us a brief presentation, and we'll see if we can ask some right. questions, okay?
We appreciate the opportunity to be with you this evening, and we brought the entire team that will be working on the project. We were fortunate enough to be selected. Let's just jump to the I'm Tim Oakley, principal of Oakley Collier, and will be the architect of record.
You may need to point it to that.
Point it that way.
There you
yeah.
go.
And we've experienced our first technical
back?
Difficulty.
Yeah, let's just move the podium back so you can see it.
We're located in Rocky Mountain in Raleigh. We've been in business since 1988. Ann Collier and I are the principals of the firm. And we pride ourselves on being a service-oriented firm with 85% of our businesses repeat clientele. It's just, we realize 30 minutes, we want to make sure that we answer all the questions y'all may have. And what we'll do now, as I said, I'm Tim Oakley, project architect. Go in.
I'm Tim's business partner, Ann Collier, the Collier part of the firm.
All right.
David Griffin with Oakley Collier, new project manager.
Frankie Joyner with Oakley Collier, I handle construction administration.
Craig Fisher with Stewart, a structural engineer, and Stewart and Oakley Collier have partnered together for the past 20 years.
And all three of you are also in Rocky Mount? Or?
This group.
This four.
Chris and Raleigh.
Here in Raleigh.
Here in Raleigh. Okay. Thank you.
Chris and Moore.
And I'm Larry Sneeden with AECOM in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I'm a Wilmington native. And I just had her call Molly. Very familiar with the coastal environment.
I'm Alan Crick with CDHF Engineers, electrical engineer.
And we really think it's important to put together a team that has cohesiveness and the ability to do work. I'm sorry.
I'm Troy Grady with CDHF Engineers, mechanical
okay.
engineer.
Okay.
I get a little excited.
That's okay.
As we prepare for this, Nancy had shared with us that some or all of the members that may have contacted or visited some of the project sites. And we've prepared a short presentation, but we're also ready to answer any and all questions you might have. And we've got a number of slides that demonstrate the project we've been involved with. We work in a lot of different municipalities in and around the state, and we work all the highlighted counties are the ones that we have performed projects in. And we have worked from one end of North Carolina coastal area to the other end, so we're quite familiar with what it takes to build a weather-resistant structure in coastal regions of North Carolina. We have a lot of experience with not only renovations and additions to municipal projects, town halls and police stations in any number of shape, forms, and fashion, and any budget configuration. We've done quite a few different facilities. Fire stations, same scenario, whether it be new, freestanding, or additions, and coastal environments. We're bidding the project, albeit not an EMS or fire station. We're bidding the project August the 2nd in Carter County.
There's public works facilities, so similar components with bays and office space and training and storage, things like that.
That does bring one question. I saw that your firm is about 18 folks.
Yes.
About 18 folks. And that, what is the amount of jobs that you actually run at one time? Like what happens, you know, if you win this and then you win a few?
The fortunate part about architecture and design is they never move at the same pace. You will start programming and preliminary design on one while you may be in the working drawings of another. So our history, we run about $35 to $40 million worth of construction volume.
Okay.
In a year. So we have a lot of capacity, but at the same time, as you look at our team, we're all doing different elements of the design, whether it be the structural design or the MEP or civil site. So there's always a collaboration and conversation between the team members and the movement of a project, because they do have different stages of design. Good evening.
Apologize for being late. Can I join the council?
Certainly may.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you for that, because I did notice that some of the support firms were larger, but you guys are the boss.
Mm-hmm.
So, the second question is, do you ever subcontract your responsibilities if you get very busy?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you.
The boss
didn't want to
here.
Hear that. Yes.
We learned a long time ago, as the principals of the firm, we're not only the face, we're responsible for the actions of our team. And we have worked with our teams in the past that you hire designers because we're professionals and we should know what we're doing and should understand the code and the ramifications of the code. So if we get it wrong from that standpoint, we see that as not your problem, that's our problem. You change your mind, it's a different situation.
Mm-hmm. Now, we did, and forgive me for, I wanted to rush into questions a little bit, so since we only had the half hour, right? And then maybe you could tell us some things. We did spend some time speaking to quite a few of your customers, reviewing quite a few of the things that you had done. Couldn't really find anybody who had a real problem with you, so I guess I'll have to make up some of my own or something. But
that's good.
But we spent some time in Havelock, and that was actually quite an impressive building.
Thank you.
That was $1.9 million for the size of that building is pretty significant, I thought.
That project had a lot of challenges in that we were the second firm that they had hired from and had not gone so well and had terminated their contract and brought us in to pick up the pieces. And picking up the pieces involved, you only have this much money left. And so figuring out how you make our project work. And by the way, we're sitting at the end of a runway, the Cherry Point Air Base, and those jets you hear,
right.
You don't want to hear them so much because in their old building,
we would stop.
You stop.
And
then we had to construct their facility within feet or inches of the existing building, and get them operational while they maintained operation in their existing facility, and then remove the old building and the asbestos and the ground contamination from fuel tanks. So lots of challenges for a tight budget, and not to tell all the tales. And we had a contractor that was very difficult, extremely difficult. And we had ended up assuming the role, and I say this gingerly, we almost had to step into the role of construction manager.
There was some discussion about that, but it was in a positive view that you guys kind of stepped in and took over and still were able to get everything done at cost.
Yes,
and
sir.
On time, which was very nice to hear. Which leads me to another question, which is 62% of your work is renovation, according to your proposal. Now, a lot of this is going to be renovation, but there is some new construction as well.
Yes, sir.
Now, I think you also did the Havelock Fire Station.
Yes, sir.
And both of those projects were brand new construction, though you walked into those.
The fire station was an addition. Was addition renovation to the existing fire police station.
That's actually that bottom.
Yes. Yep.
Right there.
That was the EMS. Actually, it's the fire station, police station, and we added the EMS wing, if you will.
Sleeping quarters.
Sleeping quarters.
The second one was the new one.
Yeah, the one on the west of the town, that's right. The big red roof.
Yep.
That was the new one.
That's right.
That was the firm that got let go.
Okay, then I had one other question for you, and then I should let you guys run or let Jim jump through his, the things that he had was, should we hire you and you bring in, are you going to bring in one proposal or are you going to bring in options?
You know, we wish we could bring in one, but that's not how we work.
Okay.
We work as a collaborative effort, and so the best solution, design solution, is after having conversations with all the stakeholders, everybody's got a dog in the fight, so to speak, we go back and put together different scenarios, whether it be a site configuration, building elevation, flow, work. There's hundreds of ways to solve a puzzle, and that's what we are, puzzle solvers.
Okay.
And we like to present multiple solutions, because from those solutions, the users go, well, how about, I like part of this, but can you make it work over here?
Personally, that I would like to see a variety of options so that, you know, our department heads have the opportunity to take their preferences, so to speak.
Well, we do ask, and this is, I'm a fast talker, so when we do programming, we meet with management to get what their thoughts are, and then we ask to meet with department heads to get, if they're ones in the trenches, they're the ones having to make it work. Get their input, and everybody has, oh, I wish I had a corner office with a hot tub and a view or something.
Sure.
And so we, our role is not to tell them no, but to report back what those findings are and how does it fit into your program and the budget.
Okay. And
ultimately, the decision makers make the final decision, do they get the hot tub.
Now, while you're on that, you know, we have fairly small departments, but our fire department particularly is right now transitioning between from volunteer to full-time, and still we have, even with full-time, we'll have a very small department. What about meeting with all of our firemen, since that's such a big part of it, and getting not just the department heads' input, because I find that maybe some of us at the top have a tunnel vision of what we want as opposed to the people who actually work there every day or even have to live there.
Yeah, we just finished a volunteer fire department design in Winterville, North Carolina, and we went there, the design team, met with them in the evening because you know, they work during the day somewhere else. So we meet in the evenings and go through the group meeting with all everybody who wanted to show up for the meeting on their side.
Right.
And we went through three or four different meetings like that to get to what they wanted, ultimately wanted. So we do try to solicit and make ourselves available at whatever time and convenient for our client. Same thing with public input, if there's a public input session. And we certainly try to, I'm not going to say control that, but you don't go there with an open menu. You go there with a palette of, you like blue or light blue? And try to help guide that conversation. And so we offer that as part of our service as well.
If I could, given all the experience you have in these type of structures and in these buildings, I saw a lot of really interesting things that Jim, being a fireman and EMS professional and things like that, may be aware of. But things like rubber floors in the training rooms, you know, what type of things we need for superior, you know, information processing. I imagine you're going to bring those type of recommendations for us.
We do. We whether it be the data, communications, at, or the finishes, do we put epoxy on the floor, do we use resin on the floor, we're fortunate in that we have access to some really good security guidance, and that our consultant is the former director of the SBI. Actually, is her husband as well.
We get him at a really good price.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
We get great expertise in communicate or security at a reasonable fee.
Okay.
Do you normally supply project oversight?
Yes, sir. Frankie Joyner is our construction administrator. He is here on a weekly basis. He's also here as situations arise. If the wheels run off somewhere along the way, he's here. Frankie is, I guess I'm speaking on behalf. He is very attuned to what it takes to build a building and knowing when a contractor is telling him a bid, and the ability to call him out and ask for corrections when a contractor says, oh, I'll make that time up. You cannot make time up. So asking for recovery schedules. Thank you. And documenting costs. We are very dogmatic about tracking money, and that it's not ours, it's yours. And so when the contractor says, well, that's an extra, Frankie will beating to death before we consent to any recommendations to our owners. So very, very thorough in documentation.
So last 12 years, you were 2% within budget in all your projects?
Yes, sir.
All right. Okay.
We pride ourselves on thoroughness of our documentation. Mm-hmm. And what that means is, not only do we get a very strong following of general contractors who like to bid our work, that we manage to bring them in on our budgets or the owner's budgets. Again, a few things that we have no control over. The owners, and if they want to change their mind, or you start digging a hole in the site and find some burial ground or whatever. But as far as design faux pas or those kind of things, we produce a very concise set of documents that we can be proud of.
Let me ask you, when you talk about the site there, you notice we're very close to the ocean. Fortunately, we're not going to be built right on the beach, but we do have a lot of sand here. And considering some past experiences, what kind of experience do you have building this close to the beach?
We have built projects in Currituck, Nags Head, Dare County, Carver County, in the sand. Our structural engineer, Craig Fisher.
We have a lot of experience in Wilmington. High schools, middle schools, at the university, so we're fully adept at structures.
One of the things we ask our clients is to perform a soil boring, geotechnical survey, so that we'll better understand the types of soils we're dealing with. Some clients say, well, I don't want to spend that $5,000, but it's a good money to spend so that we can spare.
It's really a requirement to spend it.
Okay, my other question that I guess maybe touched on just a tiny bit, you are in Rocky Mount. How readily available could you be if we really needed you?
If it's a physical be in front of you, it takes me 2.5 hours to get here. With our technology, one of the things that Frankie utilizes on the sites is a iPad with has camera capabilities. So as he is looking at details on site, if he has a question for mechanical engineers, electrical engineers, or site or structural, He photographs and says, hey, what do we do here? How do we do that? So we're instantly connected that way. But 2.5 hours away, we're also working in Whiteville. I'm drawing a blank there for a second. So we're accustomed to travel. And engineering is in Wilmington, so they're very readily available.
With the change orders, about...
we don't know that.
It's an ugly word.
How do you normally handle change orders other than a weapon?
Frankie, you answer the question. You go through that process for us.
In an unforeseen situation, that's the fuel tank that's buried in the ground, what I will typically do is I will write what's called a field directive or a construction directive, which is a formal legal AIA document, and I'll explain in verse, if I need to attach sketches, I will, that instructs the contractor to go perform that work. It's typically a life safety issue, somebody's in danger, we need to do it right now. He'll give me a lump sum amount of money that you guys will see up front. We'll agree on the money, lump sum not to exceed, and what work that needs to be done. Everybody signs it, he goes to work. Then he tracks all that on a T&M basis. So when he's done, it says a $10,000 product. It's not going to be any more than that. Could be five, could be six, depending on what he encounters once he starts digging it apart. If it's a situation where we missed a piece of hardware, we're probably going to be writing you a check or deducting a bill or something. You'll never see that. That's typically how I handle that type of stuff. But in any event, he's going to give me, Mr. Contractor is going to give me labor rates, material breakdown pieces, parts. If he bought a pump or a bucket of bolts, I'm going to see a bill of sale. I'll see something from a warehouse that shows he bought it from there and how much it was, and all the consultants, I'll say, guys, review if it's a mechanical part or an electrical part. They know what stuff costs. They go to Lowe's and Rigby and all the supply houses. They know what it costs. So, what we find most of the time is, particularly at this level of work, they're pretty good at what they do, and we don't find a lot of folks trying to hoodoo us. But every now and again, you'll get, and it's usually electrical contractors. They'll go buy a box full of fittings or parts, and then they'll try to bill you for that box when you only need two. Well, no, we're not going to pay for 125. We're going to pay for the two that we needed. Or you're going to give us the other 123.
Yeah, stay on the job.
Right. But that's how we track it, and you know, things happen, but we keep them honest.
Well, one of the things that we've been involved with in the past was being told, but that's industry standard, when we were unhappy with the work.
Where our specifications are fairly tight in terms of what we require, whether it be the flatness of the concrete or the plumbness of the wall or weather tightness of windows. And it's pretty darn tough for a contractor, whether it be general contractor or MEP or like civil, to pull the wool over our eyes and try to get us to accept something that, no, that's not industry standard. It may be theirs, but it's not ours. And we're not bashful. We don't mind telling them, take it out and do it again. And it's that yardstick of, would you want that in your house, or would you live with that? No.
Are you going to have anything about LEED?
Please, we are.
That's my next question.
We are lead accredited designers. We typically, most of our client base, they all want high performance buildings. Very few want to go to LEED certification, and I can't say I blame them. I mean, why do you want to pay the money for the plaque? We work into our designs high performance buildings design as our norm. Daylighting, water conservation. We talked with Larry earlier about stormwater and how do we manage stormwater on the site, and try to keep it green. Do we collect rainwater? Do we replenish the fire trucks with it? But there's certain things we can do in the design of a building that contribute greatly to energy efficiency and design, and it really doesn't cost you a dime. A lot of, in my opinion, high performance design is just the designers, us, thinking through the process. Don't saddle the owner with some complicated mechanical system that you have to call somebody from 10 bucks to operate. Be practical in design and find the efficiencies that way.
Are any of your buildings LEED certified?
The building in the upper left-hand corner is the Golden Leaf Foundation. I can't remember, silver, gold, I don't remember. The next one is the Greenville Convention Center, which was actually an addition and remodel, is in the process of silver design. The building on the bottom is Nash Community College, 80,000 square feet, and that went through the process. The owner didn't want to pursue it, but it would have qualified for gold if they had wanted to pursue that. And the bottom one is the Ronick Electric Co-op, and that's a silver.
Okay. How much more is the cost for that? I mean, even if you were a bronze.
The cost of the certification or just the...
The certification, what more you have to do.
The certification depends on the cost of
the
project, scale of
project.
Go ahead.
When LEED certification comes with a price tag just for putting in the application, but then parts of, and you can add to this too, David, because we work on that together some, but parts of it are also things that you may not normally do that add cost to the project. So generally speaking, we see 2-5% more of construction cost to do with certification.
And what one of them is commissioning, whether you have a commissioning or an advanced commissioning, and that has a lot to do with mechanical systems as well.
And like LEED is a little more broad scope than just your building. There's points for bus stops and proximity, apartment complex. I mean, it's a very broad scope, so a lot of times, depending on your project, it might not be practical because most of your points might not have anything to do with your building. It could do with your environment around you. The PMD systems going in is just a variety of things that count towards points, but not always practical fit on the building.
That's good to know.
So it's don't think about just the building, it's a much bigger view of energy and reuse.
So I apologize for being late to everyone. So I was on College Road with the lights out and the flooding. And the storm. I'm glad it doesn't rain down here in Cary Beach, probably. You guys were smart enough to get here early. Kind of my question is, how do you manage the trade-offs between, and you guys may have talked about this, right? Not scope, budget, and schedule. How do you guys push your customers to give you good input at the beginning so you get that right? Right? I mean, is that a reasonable question, right? Okay, so. How do you guys drive us to make the right inputs to you guys so you make the best project for us, right? How do you lead us to the right answer?
I'll answer that.
I
got to
finish it for you.
Okay, so the process that we would begin with would start with programming, which is just sitting down and going through what the needs of the different groups that will occupy space renovated on it. And then with that, when we start there, and we see how big is big, then we start applying dollars. You know, that gives us square footage, then we start applying dollars to that. And then at that point, it becomes a process of establishing priorities with you. You know, so if we rebuild a room like this, that ideally may seat 100, can we do it with 75? You know, if 100 is on the worst day, would 50 or 75 work for 90% of the time, and then how do we accommodate? So, and there are also things, designing in, if we need additional offices for the future potentially, or a conference room, designing spaces that can serve as both, that an office is designed, or a conference room is designed as a future office when growth or expansion meetings, so things like that. But it's really establishing the priorities with you after we hear all the vision and the needs and wants.
Early on, we try to establish expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So we know what to expect of you, you know what to expect of us. And the one thing that we can't do is tell you, you can't spend your money. You may say, well, we want to add this widget. Our role is to tell you, okay, that doesn't fit in your budget.
Mm-hmm.
You still have the option, I want to do it, or we go find something else to switch out within the program to make it work.
one quick example, you know, that what we, this first portion of what you want is conceptual and budgeting and things like that. So we do a lot of studies and reports, feasibility studies, preliminary planning. Part of that is establishing project budgets. So in a case, we did just finished one in Warren County, and in that case, there was a need for an emergency operations center. And so that comes with, if it's a true emergency operations center with FEMA standards and that, it comes with a little higher price tag. So at the time we got to the wish list, because we know there's wishes and wants and then there's needs and, you know, have to's and want to's, we start looking at how can we change the building without reducing any scope, if that's some of the need. And, you know, we looked at a study of budget studies of different types of construction that still gave real quality or structural quality for emergency operations, but maybe it was not to a concrete roof structure, and it was so different things like that. Their biggest emergency were tornadoes and hurricanes, so not so much explosions, but when we just look at those options. We ended up with three different cost estimates and three different kind of design type things for them, just all based on their priorities and expectations. And don't mind doing that with you all. As we learn more about it.
And that gets back also looking at various scenarios, different schemes, and what the cost pack is.
I asked John. John doesn't have any questions. Is there anything you wanted to show us with the material that you brought?
Well, what we were really doing, Larry printed the site for us, so we were talking about how a new facility would fit on the site and some of the challenges that are here on this site, which all of them you're very much aware of, and that if we go this way, we may blow up.
Yes.
Well, we can't go that way.
Or blow.
It's not, we'll blow up, we can't go that way. They're not going to let you go that way.
So, and earlier, we have walked all through the facilities, and we talked with the assistant fire chief. And he wasn't shy about saying some of the things he liked in the program and very pointed. And we talked about how you may place the building in the front quadrant of the site, and the possibility of how you could double load a bay and create access directly to the highway and then feed it from the back. But we've also talked among ourselves as some interesting property lines and right-of-ways that may need to be addressed to clean this up. Larry can touch on those. But you know, the challenge again is to how do you go about adding on to this facility, the 2,700 or 800 square feet, and keep it within the codes that are current and the WIP codes that are current. How does it affect this building? So we have to be careful not to trigger a huge expense that you've got to go back and update everything within the building. It certainly could be talked about and laid out on the table. And then when we get to the fire station, that by itself, by code, has special requirements because of use, i.e. fire protection sprinkler. So it has to be a substantial building. It has to have special inspections. There's a different component of that. And the fact that you're in a coastal region, you've got a much higher wind load. And because it is a fire station, it's classified as a D structure.
Well, that's the wind code.
Winco, excuse me.
Central facility.
But it's a central, yeah.
It's an essential facility.
So there are issues there that have to be determined. But, you know, ideally, if you could buy that telephone company next to you.
The AT&T structure, we'd be fine.
We really need to approach that or at least talk about it.
We think, and again, we haven't done any in-depth study, but if we can keep the building to a one-story structure, is far more cost effective. We stay out of elevators and as well as some of the fire protection requirements.
Sure. Okay.
I guess maybe to wind it down, I'm going to offer you another challenge that's on my wish list. I don't know that you had an opportunity to talk with anybody in our public works department, okay? But you are familiar with Sunny Point and their because of things going on in the world and in the country, they're becoming more and more concerned about nothing at all on their property, so that we're looking at, even if it's just ground cover, we want to have somewhere to store. We can't do it. And Public Works is located over here, and they need somewhere to store things. We have some land near them that we're considering for maybe a lift station, maybe a parking lot, could be almost anything. But it would really help to have some advice to talk a little bit about the end of the fire department, whether that's something that we could work on, or if there's somewhere else that we might be able to look at and see them having something in the future to expand into.
I think part of what we do, and again, programming and analysis, part of the ass building of all the space, that way we get a really good understanding of what's really here, and then we look at repurposing spaces, reprogramming it, maybe move a wall, move some people, and just, we're the outside eyes, we're fresh to what you've got going on, and so, and we're also thick-skinned. So we can make suggestions, and you can either go, hey, that's wonderful, or have you lost your mind? And we're good with either one. We like the first one better. But our challenge is to shake out what are possibilities with limited space. How do you best maximize what you've got? I'm pretty sure you're not going to turn around next year and do this again. Mm-hmm. And if you're like most municipalities, whatever monies you spend on this one, we better get it right, and it better be durable, because there's not any other funds to come back here and prop it up.
Right.
So.
And there's no other room to expand into. Okay, any other
All
questions,
right.
guys?
No,
good.
Any last comments you guys would like to make?
Our last comment would be by us. We love what we do. We get excited about projects. It is puzzle solving for us, and we like challenges. And we've not met one we couldn't solve yet. We work cohesively as a team. We think it's important. While I may have done most of the talking tonight, I assure you that all our team members have an equal stake in what we do. And when we commit to a project, if it requires us to be here 3 nights in a row or a week, we're here. We commit, we get it done, we don't back away. And we love the opportunity to work for you.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry, for being here.
Thanks for making the trip down here and putting up with our questions.
Well, we had one good meal for lunch, and we'll probably get another one.
Please do.
Yeah. Right straight on top is Jack Mackerel. You're right down
better
here.
Better than me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm Mayor, Mother Mayor Emily Swearingen. Welcome tonight. We're glad to have you here. Here's our Mayor Pro Tem, Craig Belinsky, Commissioner Jim Dugan, and Commissioner David Hagler. We have one missing who is just had surgery and is homesick, but. I think he's one of the ones who may have gone around and looked at some of your buildings.
Okay.
So we will let you start, and then we'll follow with some questions.
Well, thank you very much. This is the Beck and Morgan Group team. We really appreciate the opportunity to come here. Cary is definitely one of our favorite places. It's the better part of our Pleasure Island. So. Don't tell.
We agree with
don't
you.
Don't care.
We already
knew
that.
We're all clutch on that.
We kind of thought you knew that. So what I'd like to do first is introduce our team. We're going to talk about a little bit about us, move about what we've done, but I want to spend most of our time, and that's what this board is here for, is talk about some thoughts we have specifically about the project you have in mind.
Okay.
So let's first talk about our introductions here, and I've asked each person here to do it, but essentially, we have architects, engineers, interior designers. So it's the whole team. These are the people that you would see from the day one right to the very last day you move in. So Mark, why don't you start with introduction?
Mark Lauderwell, I'm an architect with Becker Morgan.
David Hahn, mechanical engineer with CBHF Engineers. I'm a partner, and Jason is another one of our partners.
And Jason Familetti, electrical engineer, CBHF Engineers.
And resident.
Curie Beach resident. Very interested in this project.
Oh, if we pick you, we're going to get your phone number.
Yeah.
And how come you're wearing a tie? I mean, I can understand
them, but...
You should have seen when you wore to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Hawaiian shirt and the flip-flops.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. That's wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm Jeremy Blair with Paramount Engineering. We're a local firm in Wilmington, and I'm a partner with them.
And last
but
not
least.
Lauren Brown, I'm with Big Sky Design.
All right, so let's just tell a little bit about Becker Morgan Group. We're a firm of 80 people. We're a regional practice. In other words, we work from Delaware down to South Carolina. We actually had projects in Florida and Georgia and Louisiana as well. But a lot of what we do out of this location in Wilmington is the public safety work, of which the project before us tonight is part of that. We've been in business for 33 years. And we're proud to say that it's planning our client's success is really what it's about. We're not successful unless what we do makes you happy, makes you successful. This isn't about us, this is about you. So a little bit about a public safety background. We've been doing this for quite a while. We've designed over 500,000 square feet of public safety buildings, over $100 million in work. Mark and I and Dave and Lauren and Jason have all worked together and are working together right now on public safety projects in Jeremy's company. We designed his new offices, and he's one of our other key players. So this is not some group we just threw together to impress you. This is people that we work with time and time again because they share our philosophy about how to make sure the client's needs are taken care of. This is essentially the public safety group that we have. We're active members of NFPA. I've written articles for APCO magazine. I was just at the NENA event, which is the National Emergency Number Association, and gave a talk on site selection. So this is something that we like to do and we're passionate about doing. Obviously, there's Curie Beach down here. And just to show you how close we are, now, days like today is a whole other matter, but most of the time, we're pretty close. We're on Rand Parkway, basically to the west of the college. Paramount, CBHF, and our consulting engineer, structural engineer Andrew, we're all right there together, right in the middle of town by Hanover Center, more or less. Big Sky is out on Mason Road. So we're all close by. And I wanted to emphasize that while we do practice in a large region, this is the home base for the public safety side of what we do. And we're thrilled to be able to have an opportunity. Responsiveness is really important in what we do. And that's why I wanted to make sure the team was all here. If we have a mechanical problem, I'll call Dave. Dave will come down. He'll go talk to somebody about the issue. We don't dole it out and we say, you know, delegate to somebody else. I mean, each of these things we take on personal responsibility. We make sure that we satisfy your concerns. So from an organization standpoint, it's a pretty straightforward tree. And again, I just point out these are the same cast of characters that we use in all of our projects. Our mugshots. We're pretty much all here, except for Rick. But generally speaking, I will do contracts, get the project set up. Mark will manage the project and is our primary designer on the project. Rick does a lot of respects and has got a lot of just local history with that. This is just a sampling of some of our public safety projects that we've done. I just wanted to point out that there's several that are either recently completed or in progress. City of Wilmington, a couple of fire stations for them. We're doing just starting one for New Hanover. And we're in progress on a project at North Topsail. We've done several of these projects. Three or four of them are town hall related. In other words, the city police town hall was sort of co-joined. They're not segregated for that, but we do also some significant police work. I just finished Delaware State Police Troop 3 in Dover, Delaware, and we're working at a beach facility, Troop 7 in Lewis, Delaware. So we run up and down the coast. Pretty much everything you see here is on the ocean. I wanted to point out also Ocean City Beach Patrol headquarters. So ocean rescue is also something that we've had experience with and enjoyed working with. Oops, I just screwed up.
Hit the wrong button.
What did I do? Hit the bottom button rather than the...
Let's see. That's okay.
Start over button.
Thanks.
All right. There we go. We're back on track. Thank you very much. So we're going to take a quick tour through some of the projects that we've recently done. This is Wilmington Station 3 off Cinema Drive. This may have been the one I think you'll turn.
Yes. Quite impressive.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Nice doors.
Yes, I was going to say that's the first time we've used
the high-end doors.
But it's, yeah. Did they demonstrate the doors for you?
No.
Those things open like in 5 seconds. You couldn't open your closet bifolds any faster than that. They just spring right open.
I saw the ones in Southport.
Yeah, right. And the trucks are out there right away. The issue they had, and I don't know if you spend much time in town, but MP Park, just a month ago, the guy drove out before the door was all the way up and just knocked it right off the
thing.
Expensive doors, expensive trucks.
40 grand a door.
Anyway, so that's turned out well. This is LEED Silver certified. We'll talk a little bit more about energy management and so forth as we get a little deeper into that, but we wanted to mention that. So just a couple of interior shots here. Light, bright, efficient workspace is sort of the point of this. And we know you don't have any kind of particular exhaust control in your current station, and we think that's something you need to have.
Yeah.
It's required.
And we asked when we were there, because most stations you see the hose hook up.
Right.
This was a system that they wanted to use at this station. The station has very few calls.
Yeah, they said the doors are open all the time.
Right. So based on that, we worked with Safe Air on the design for the number of calls expected for this facility. And so it looked like it was going to be a good fit to keep the ceiling cleared out and not load it up with systems and having to tie them into the exhaust. So this really works well for this station.
And, you know, we could go with the attached exhaust applying the vent, and it's also a through-the-roof type of system. But all these systems have a little CO2 sensor and all that to make them turn on when the conditions get right. Which brings up a question Mark and I were talking about on the way over. There's been a study on a cancer in fire service, which we could get you a copy of. It. Things like diesel exhaust and the job hazard exposure, you know, which you can't control that, but you certainly can't control what you do in the station. So that's something that we really try to pay attention to on an air change issue matter, and even on the inside of the building. And I wanted to ask Lauren to talk about the firefighter health and safety, because that's really an important. That's where your money is, your resources. So.
So this is an image of fire station number 3 in the kitchen area, and so as far as finishes go, we went with more of a residential feel. So in our selection of the backsplash tile, the flooring tile, and then just our general overall color palette, we tried to incorporate more of a comfortable, relaxed work environment, so that when the firefighters have to be on, they're more prepared, better prepared in a more relaxed state. And wherever possible, we try to incorporate as much of an outside view and natural lighting. And then it's very important as well, kind of in keeping with what Ernie was just talking about, that to incorporate low VOC finishes and also environmentally sustainable and friendly finishes whenever possible. You'll also notice that just the color palette throughout is interesting, but neutral, so that it's not overstimulating. So just in general, trying to keep the firefighters relaxed and comfortable.
Yeah, and the sort of the contrast between the firehouse, mm-hmm. And the part that's the home.
Right.
Part of it's a business and part of it's not a business. So studies show that in all lines of work, that the good environments make people feel better, perform better, they're not sick as often. So you get more money for your, you know, for your resources if you pay attention.
But you couldn't get them to put the grill where it belongs.
No, we could not. But that's sort of human issues that we struggle with from time to time. So,
but they have the outdoor grill.
Oh my God, they got it made. Who would want to not fight a fire out of that place? The most recent one is Fire Station 5, which is generally the same interior program, same kinds of rooms, reorganized in a little bit different look. So we wanted to bring this to your attention. That it's, you know, it's the inside can be similar, but the outsides can be greatly different. This is in a more industrial port area, so to speak, off a shipyard. So we're trying to, you know, come up with a sort of a theme that's maybe a little more consistent with what would be appropriate for that particular.
And you can touch upon this later, but you had to work back down to a budget on this one to get it to where it's.
Absolutely, that's a good point. They're very critical. There was a fixed amount of money, and what we do with these projects, all of them, renovations in particular, since you're contemplating that, is. Right from the very early design, you want to take that through a costing effort. And we do that during schematic design, design development, and during construction documents. So we use professionals to do that. So we're not, you know, kind of pushing it kind of in our direction, if you will. But that's a key element. And we make sure that we don't wait to get the bids in to change the design. We change the design right at the beginning. If it needs to be adjusted, we come to you and say, like we had with this project,
it started out as two stories.
Yeah. Well, tell me, why don't you finish the story then for me?
Yeah, the site is a little bit tight. You've got to have a pond, and they wanted so much parking. So we decided to try to, and they really wanted to have the bunk rooms upstairs. So, you know, then that means elevator, two stairs. Mm-hmm. And we also had a big meeting room attached to this, similar to number three. Which they like that idea because it allows the community to be able to use the space.
It's a nice room.
Yeah, it's a good outreach. If you want to come in and rent the space, you can. But again, we were running up against the budget on this one, so they made the decision, okay, in this one we won't have that. We'll just have a smaller training room. Let's get rid of the elevator and the stairs and just put it all on one floor. And we just really had to work it.
The bidding environment had changed from Fire Station.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Everybody's busy now, so things are costing more, materials are costing more.
Sure,
right.
You've got to be aware of that.
So the first estimate that we got was about $1 million over their budget. So we said, okay, we're just going to have to change it. So
Take square footage out right away.
Right.
And so we made that still have their bunk room in there.
Oh, yeah. Right. The casualties were really the size of the public space. They said, well, you know, that's not really mission critical, maybe nice, and we could put it back later, but that was one of the big areas that we were able to squeeze. And the other thing we were able to do, there's three doors on the front here. We actually lengthened the three bays so that we could get more vehicles in a stack arrangement rather than and cut one of the bays off the side. That actually saves the square footage. So
could I ask you, I noticed in several of your designs you have that little, I don't know what you call it,
tower.
Up there on top, the tower. What's the purpose of that? What does that do up there?
It's kind of a symbolic. In the city of Wilmington's, you know, they're all about creating this postcard architecture. Mm-hmm. I mean, fire stations are one of the few public buildings left that are built on a regular basis. I mean, it used to be the towns built, you know, big town halls and all kinds of things, but fire stations are one of the few that are left. So, it's a nice gesture because it's such a center for the community. It's kind of like we need to make some kind of gesture that shows that this is a safe place. This is a, you know, in Europe, you had the steeples everywhere. So, you know, if you went to a church, you could get fed there. You might find a place to sleep. And in our modern world, you know, the fire station is seen as a place of safety. So it's kind of like this beacon or tower. It's kind of this community sense of, you know, here's a safe place.
It was really the image of an old fire station type of a tower is really what that is. And in number three, that's actually a useful tower. They're going to hang hose in that tower.
Right.
So, you know, that tower actually is doing something. This one is going to be more of a lighthouse or more of a beacon, I guess, to signify that it's part of that same.
Although we do have a second floor in that tower that they're going to use from the apparatus for training.
Right, for some training.
Yeah. Like put a ladder up to this fake window to climb up to. So we were able to use it.
Yeah, where we can. I mean, that's a good thing to do, to build training opportunities into your fire station. I mean, you've got the space. They're in it most of the time. If you can climb and crawl and and so forth, it really makes sense to be able to do that. Another thing I wanted to point out too, sites differ a lot, and you can put a lot of money into a site. Now, and we'll talk about yours more specifically, but site costs can really change what you can do with your building, and that was the subject of my seminar, was sometimes you pick the wrong site because it's expedient, and you end up spending all kinds of money that you can't put into your mission. You end up spending it on your site, so you have to be really careful about that. Luckily, you're not going to have that situation. This is the site, speaking of sites, for North Tops Beach. Very kind of unique scenario, and those of you that have been there, it's essentially one long road. It's 13 miles of beach that includes Surf City, North and North Topsail and Topsail. And so there's two stations on North Topsail, and they each cover about 6 miles of beach. So it's a really long, long way to go. And they're at elevation plus six. And those of you that are familiar with flood elevations know that's not the kind of number you want to have. We're working with them on elevation issues, durability issues, and so forth. And that's very important to understand that a fire station is an essential facility, class four. You've got to be able to endure just about anything. And I would suspect that you don't run and hightail it when it gets bad. I assume this is the place you're going to want to hunker down. So that means, from a structural standpoint, the different wind loads, seismic loads, and all that we have around here, it's a different kind of a ball game than an inland fire station. Almost all of what we do is in the hurricane zone from Delaware to South Carolina. And so we do this kind of work on a regular basis, and I can tell you not everybody gets it. Not everybody understands how challenging it is. Particularly, now these guys are, 12 feet out of the VE zone or something like that? I mean, they're really close. Yeah. The road is right on the edge of the VE zone, so they have got particular challenges that we're gonna have to mitigate.
Well, also their town ordinances require that you build in the VE, like you're in the VE zone, even if you're only in the A zone.
Okay. Right. So we'll be 6 or so feet above where they are now, at a minimum. But it'll be interesting to see how that actually all works out.
Right.
And this is just a...
I wanted to say one thing about this software that we use, this modeling software, and you can see it for number 5 as well. We always do this in the beginning just to try to generate a certain feeling and what the building is going to look like. But it's a simple thing to change. It's something that we can present and, you know, kind of get a feeling or, no, we don't like that. It's like number 3 was a good example where we made our first pass and... You know, we put a lot of metal on it, and the city council, no, we hate metal. We want brick.
Right.
So okay, we changed it, but we did it in the model, and the model. I guess we should have shown that, but the model of number 3 looks exactly like the photographs we showed of number 3. Even though it's cartoonish, in some sense, you get the feeling of what it's going
to. Really important to get the understanding of what you're getting, and you can tell. Look at it plans in black and white. Most people, it just doesn't make sense. So I think it's very important, particularly you've got constituents that are reaching into their pocket, right, Jason, taxes and whatnot. You've got to be able to show what you're doing, and it's got to make sense to everybody. So I think these are easy ways to do that. Something we regularly do. I wanted to bring this particular station up because this is a renovation. This is a historic district in a town in Delaware, where the upper part was an old, but it's an existing modern fire station. The lower part was a dilapidated old area. And we actually tore down the non-historic area and put 3 new bays in this sort of fitness inside. The original 1910 building is off to the left. This is an example of being able to work around an existing fire station. They didn't lose a day of service during that whole time. So we've done this time and again. We've done it with police stations, town halls, all that sort of thing. If it's an issue, we know how to deal with, and if you plan correctly, it can certainly be done successfully. So another recent project, Ocean City Fire Department in Ocean City, Maryland. We also did their beach patrol headquarters as well. And then a couple of more modest stations. Not everything is expensive and high dollar. The Wilmington stations are a little more toward the higher end. They're not super, super expensive, but they're getting there. I just wanted to show a couple of more modest ones. The next two are both pre-engineered metal structures. This project is in a flood zone, but little lesser degree, since it's up on a little bit of a hill, had a very small footprint, three bays, just backing from the front, a training area that the windows upstairs there, and then a small bunk area. They have mainly a volunteer, like you, or they have a couple of paid, but mainly a volunteer. So when the clouds get dark, then this is a place where they can assemble probably 25 people on the second floor and keep them out of harm's way. And our last one is, sorry about that, last fire station is again just another simple project, under $1 million. This would happen to be through USDA funding. I don't know if that's a funding source you're thinking about or not, but USDA money is generally available to smaller communities. I would think from a population standpoint, you may be able to qualify. And a lot of folks ask about grants and so forth, but after, three or four years ago when FEMA changed the rules, the building construction grant money is just gone right now. You can buy equipment, but you can't seem to get much more than that, which I think is a real shame. I feel like our infrastructure is kind of falling behind a little bit. But and then just quickly, some other related projects. Really enjoy working with the police departments. I find them very highly organized. They pretty much know what they want to do. Dave and Jason and Mark and I have done several military projects where we have military security issues. So it's interesting, police and military are very similar in terms of security requirements. This has a completely bulletproof set of windows on two sides, what we call like a man lock kind of condition here where you can come into the front. There's a bulletproof window. You can, fairly good size. You can see the folks working behind the counter, but they're behind bulletproof glass. All the walls in this vestibule are paneled with bullet-resistant materials. So security is a big issue. And we want to make sure that your facility is hardened to the proper degree. A little more complicated when trying to integrate it with the town hall and all that, but I think the principles are still there, and it's still very important. Separate, particularly in a beach town where we have a lot of visitors, you want to separate the troublemakers from the non-troublemakers. You want to keep your private staff side separate from your public side to keep those dangers apart. 911 center in Scotland County, again, kind of a low feel, metal roof building, but we've done a number of centers like that. Basically the same footprint is the Hertford 911 center, which is in the opposite side of the state of the Virginia line. That one just went live July 12th, but essentially a similar project as well. Again, security, cameras, a lot of technology. So we're very comfortable in integrating radio equipment, data, intrusion detection, and door card security, things of that nature, kind of however far you want it to go.
That's very tough, those 9/11 structures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are tough.
Yep.
Spent time at ours in Hanover County. It's very impressive.
Yeah. But if we were in a bad situation, it's absolutely where you want to be.
Right.
So you want to feel that level of comfort, that your first responders in fact can respond in those kind of conditions. So I think that's very important. I'm gonna let Dave and Mark talk a little bit more, and Jason, about our lead approach in general, or our energy approach.
Do you want to start?
No, we
start. Go ahead.
Obviously, the energy codes are getting more and more stringent upon the energy use. And we design all of our systems to be energy efficient, and maybe more importantly, we make them maintainable, and we design them to provide the correct amount of control and ventilation for the space, because we've found in a lot of the school work that we've done, if you provide a very controlled building for temperature and humidity, control the ventilation to give them a healthy indoor environment, they're going to be much more productive, happier, less sick days, and that's what we try to do in a nutshell with our designs. And we've been able to do that in the last three fire stations we've done together. We haven't sacrificed performance or efficiency. One building was LEED, the other building's not. They didn't want to pay for that, but essentially we kept 90% of the energy efficiency and performance of the system, and we would do the same thing here.
What percentage of your buildings would you say are LEED certified?
Not very many. A lot of them start out
to be LEED certified, and then you start looking at the cost of the documentation, the additional engineering that's involved, and then you look at, you might get a building that's going to be 3% or 2% more efficient than what you would get otherwise, and you get a plaque and it's going to cost $50,000 to $70,000 to do it, and usually the owner goes, oh, that's nice, just give me a really good, comfortable, energy efficient building and I don't care about the plaque. We'll see it when we see our monthly utility bills and go, nice.
Right, and back in the, you know, 5-6 years ago when the energy code hadn't modernized, you could do a lesser efficient building, a cheaper building, but you can't do that anymore. I mean, the scale has been, the bar has been brought up, and I think that's great. You've got a 24/7 facility here, so if we screw up, you're paying for that 3 times as much. If we get it right, you're benefiting 3 times as much. So on a building that's a 24/7, my goodness, the benefits are tremendous, and I agree with Dave. We don't see that many certified buildings, but we're talking about doing high performance all the time. I would say 90% of the buildings are high performance. Throw out maybe an industrial warehouse or something like that, but even with those folks, they're, you know, LED lighting and higher ventilation rates and whatever else, and all of the materials that Lauren is dealing with now are low VOC, you know, high recyclables. We haven't gotten to Jeremy as well, but I mean, this go right into the site design, correct?
Right. I mean, you know, you ultimately have to, you know, I like where they were going is, are you going to do things that don't really make sense just to get a few more points on a certification if that's ultimately important to the client? You know, we can do that for them, but in the site design, you know, you've got obligations to meet stormwater requirements and things like that we feel like you can do, you know, really easily here with the soil conditions and the the water classifications that you're dealing with, and it makes sense to do it, but it's not, you know, something that you're spending a lot of extra money on.
So it sounds like you're already familiar with the soil conditions around here.
We have, our firm, we have, you know, 25 local folks, and we're, you know, primarily in the coastal region and have a lot of familiarity with the unique regulations and the requirements, you know, directly for stormwater and other things. You know, fortunately, you have a great site here. You're outside of the flood zone. Floods on eggs, you're not in nutrient sensitive waters, and your soil conditions are going to, you know, be nice and promote infiltration and other low maintenance aesthetic stormwater systems.
Is there anything you wanted to show us relative to here? The only reason I'm bringing it up is in about 10 minutes you're going to start to have the public coming in for the regular council.
Sure. Well, let's just zip on because we can double back on some of these things here. Mark had talked a little bit about 3D modeling. This is a little more in-depth view. This is called BIM, Building Information Modeling. This just shows you when each of the disciplines draw in 3D, the components come together, and you see how you can integrate, in this case, a gym, all the structural elements with the lighting, with the HVAC, and all the parts fit. So that's something that we do as a sort of a matter of course. Mm-hmm. A project underway right now is the Embassy Suites in downtown Wilmington next to the Convention Center. Just coming out of the ground, if I can finally say that. But this was done entirely in BIM. And you can imagine how a $30 million project, how important it is to be able to communicate to your investors what it looks like and will it meet my standards and so forth. So let's take the next 10 minutes and really talk about issues that are specific to your site.
Mainly wanted to show you like the first step of our process. What we always do with everyone is what we call a charrette process, where we bring a board like this and, you know, some of the things that you would want to include, and then some of the other, you know, like if that's a fire station, you know, apparatus space. Well, we can have, you know, a half a day or an all day meeting to talk about, you know, we can move these things around the site. That's a turning radius for a fire truck. So, you know, if you needed.
You're participating in the planning process in a visual way. You're seeing what we're thinking. Saying, oh, I got the thing, run back, we're going to draw some pictures and come back and show you. We're going to sit down, and by the end of the day, we will have had this puzzle palace organized It starts off chaotic, but it's organized. And at the end of it, you go, this makes sense. Now I know why we're doing it.
Right.
So there's so many issues.
There's another piece for the evidence bay.
Yeah, right.
That seemed to make it a convoy.
But just looking at the site constraints, you've got just a couple of things that came to my mind. You've got a cell tower right here. You've got a telecom operation here. I'm just guessing there's probably something that connects these two things together at some point, one way or the other. I don't know whether it goes directly in a line or it goes around, but can we put something in the path between these areas if they're related? If this is just a public safety thing, then maybe that's a little bit of a different matter. But from a traffic standpoint, we think it's really important that the public have a public face, that the public can come in, and maybe it's this way, maybe it's this way, maybe it's down here. But we can separate that from the private face. When something happens, you want your first responders unimpeded. So our thought is that this becomes police and fire road, this becomes town hall road. Mm-hmm. And then however we do this, trucks need to be able to get in and out quickly. So if we were to face that direction, let's say we have a property boundary we've got to respect, that's about as good as we can get as far as off of this road here, if it faces this way. But maybe we want to think about facing it this way, and with that's about how far back you might need to be. But maybe there's some thought that it should...
Yeah, if you wanted to put it in front of the station.
Yeah, there you go. That's what in front might look like. I don't think, Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong, that DOT, we think we might be able to widen the street, but I don't think DOT is going to let us create another access point, given that 7th is already in business. So if we were to do something like that, it almost have to be the same piece. Does it make sense? You know, can we get the truck to be able to pull in here or back up? Well, that is this enough of a radius? I don't know. These are some challenges.
Or can they pull through like this?
Right.
You know, and
exactly.
Maybe it's angled so they can pull out that
exactly.
way.
Well, just think of trying to back in off the main road.
Yeah.
During the summertime.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So maybe the drive through is a better thing. But again, we've got to be able to get to each of the bays mm-hmm. when we're talking about how we're going to do that. You know, is there any possibility that property line moves, or is there a different way to configure that this area in here to maximize traffic and access without blocking it, but also not kill your parking?
You're sure of the property line?
Not at all. We're not sure of anything.
Right.
That's the whole point is this is just a simple demonstration. This is a couple mm-hmm. hours of the due diligence.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What you want to do is get into the weeds of this thing. Jeremy pointed out the property line, according to the old map, looks like it's sitting on top of that parking lot. I hope it's out here. Right. Maybe it's not.
The road's not where it's supposed to be anyway.
Okay. So yeah. All these little things, why it's so important to do that planning up front and have all of this right. information early on, and so you know what you can do and you know what your limitations are. As opposed to just sort of willy-nilly saying, well, here and here and here, and then just make people do it. It's you got to do that planning early and get all those problems figured out right away. And then you don't have those things to come back and bite you. That's the beauty of bringing everybody together. Right. Everybody together, you know, early on. So,
but we do...
So after the initial, right, so because we're going to get focused on mm-hmm. place and stuff, and that's not mm-hmm. what we're talking about. We're talking about the process.
Right, right.
So if you keep going, right. what's right. the next step, right? So the first step is a meeting, it sounds like, with the stakeholders,
yes.
where you visually start looking at stuff. So then walk us through what happens
yeah.
next.
Okay.
And otherwise, we'll keep solid playing with these two
months.
Yeah. yeah. And who do you see as the stakeholders attending the charrette?
It would be fire chief. Maybe even firefighters, you know, the people that use the building on a day-to-day basis, because they always have input on
right.
The charrette is not a public charrette.
No, it's an end-user charrette.
Yeah, the people that use the building.
The
right.
people that pay the bills should be here because, you know, maintenance is an issue, costs are an issue. Town hall needs a representative for flow, for parking. How are we going to address, you know, the needs of the public space here? I've done quite a lot of evidence work with police departments. It's very tricky. It's very legal. It's got to be carefully orchestrated. It can't just be anywhere. It can't just be built any way. So the police department would need to be involved in this thing. It takes 6 to 8 hours. And at the end of it, you'll have a really strong picture of what we're going to do. And then you can go into what we consider the more conventional step-by-step design, price it, make adjustments, do construction documents, price that, make sure we're still in line. and then actually go out to bid and see construction.
And you have the entire design team there as well, so yes. You can hear yes. from Jason about
John, you're too loud, sir.
Light, security, and
you're too loud, sir. Thanks.
Right, right. So all those factors that have come together, you know, really, really early. Well, you could talk to Frank Blackley at number three. I mean, that's how we did their process, and it worked out great for everybody. And at the end, you don't have people walking around behind you saying, well, you should have done this, you should have done that. Everybody's on board. Everybody's seen why we did it. Everybody knows the pros and cons. You've got 20 people that are your advocates for the process. So, but that can be as big or as small a group as you'd like it to be. But we don't shy away from bigger groups. It can be quite successful.
I think in your RFQ, it was essentially to do a feasibility study, just a limited scope. But all of that would be part of this process, just figuring out what are your needs, how do we think it might work out, and then have this report with some plans at the end of that. And then if you decided to go on from there, then we can move into, you know, the more traditional, as Ernie said.
Right.
Construction documents, bidding, all those kinds.
When we have diverse stakeholders, I think this kind of a process is the perfect solution. I wouldn't do it for a doctor's office because you're dealing with two people or something like that. I mean, when you've got a lot of different thoughts, the best way is to communicate, get it out on the table and try ideas out and see what it comes. I mean, this is the easy, the cheapest part of the job, and the fact is the early planning. And let's see what happens, and let's come up with an answer which solves as many problems as we can right from the beginning.
I have a challenge I'd like to throw out to you that's kind of on my wish list. We have a public works department that's not really represented in here that is several blocks over in that area. And I'm sure you're aware of Sunny Point. You know what they are, okay? They're becoming more and more concerned, well, I guess the military is in general nationwide about their property. And the possibility of ever using an inch of it ever again is becoming less and less, which means even as far as storage for mulching yard debris, we can't even put something like that on their property, which is making it, and a lot of this is even more recent than we ever expected, even more difficult for our public works department, which desperately need some storage space. And in the design, we were originally thinking them having part of this building here, but we have some other property near them, but it's in a residential neighborhood. What if we wanted you to also talk with that department head and look at where he could fit into this, or if it would be necessary for us to really keep him in his own area or find more land or whatever.
We've done several public works yards as well. I didn't even realize that was a consideration.
Well, it's becoming more so recently.
No problem, yeah. I mean, that's the good thing of a company been around a while. We've probably seen just about every kind of a project, and particularly on the materials management and public works areas, that's a real issue. The trucks are big. 25-year-old guys run around in giant dump trucks and stuff. You got to be careful. But I'm not sure what exactly your needs are, but absolutely, I mean, it would be easy to incorporate that into the general planning.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And I think it's smart to go in and look at all the issues that you have to deal with. And as you know, land's getting more expensive and harder to find, and so being smart about how we use it is really important.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, Jason's got a really big backyard.
We could get him to move.
Yeah. People don't move out of curiosity.
It's a one-way street. Is that how?
So tell me how you plan, how you balance leading us through the whole timing, cost, and what we want so that we get to the right solution, right? Because those are the three pieces right. of any big project,
well,
right?
The first piece of this, you know, is kind of the dream work part
right.
of it, all right? What, in an ideal world, what would I like to see? Let's see what that is. Let's quantify that, which is the next step after we do our puzzling. We'll actually quantify that and then apply what we call parametric costing to it, square foot, per acre, per yard, whatever, and just get an idea of it. What you're asking for is $15 million. Did you realize that? you know, or it's five or it's two or whatever it would be. And then immediately we begin to say, okay, all right, what's most important? What's next? Can we eliminate this? Can we do this in a different phase? Let's be creative about this. Hey, if we teamed with somebody else, they can use our piece for that and we can use their piece for the other. You know, find different ways of making it work. So we're already beginning in that next, that schematic design step of trying to funnel you into what you think you can do. And that schedule then comes out along with that schematic. This is how long, this is how much. And we just begin to work on that a little bit at a time. And it progressively gets, you know, like marbles going around the top of the funnel. Mm-hmm. It all looks like craziness at first, but it all falls through one at a time at the end. And that's really how it works. And we've done that enough, we're sure it can be done that way.
And then what's your firm's approach to project management as far as who's in charge, who's responsible?
Well, just like our Hertford project. I mean, Mark and I started that project 3 years ago, I think it was. They just did a cutover on July 12th. The building's been done for essentially a month. And we were up there 2 weeks ago, you know, and the owner had a problem with the paint color. Didn't like paint color. We said, okay, let's change paint color. You know, we can do that? Yeah, we can do that. Let's just change the paint color. Come on, let's go. You know, let's get it done. So, and all these guys are the same way. Let's fix the problem. And nobody's shying away from anything. And we'll go there ourselves and make sure that it's done.
And it's start to finish, it's the same.
It's the same group.
Right, it's the same people.
Yeah. I guarantee you, at 8 o'clock at night, you call his office, he's probably still working. Because he takes responsibility for the guys that works for him. You know, and that's how we all
so that's pretty business. Much how you handle change orders.
Yeah, I mean,
change orders, isn't it?
That's right.
Good. I like that.
Well, I beg to differ.
So you might have had it in the details, but what's your performance to your budgets, like over the last three or 4 years?
Nice question.
Good question. We're under our budgets, generally speaking.
Right.
Now, there are anomalies with things that can happen. You can get strikes, you can have, you know, sudden changes, and, you know, all the bidders are busy, and they, you know, they want you to postpone it for a month or whatever, and sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But, I mean, I think our record is excellent on that. As far as the change orders as well, 1, 2% is pretty much the norm, 98, 99% being right. Now, again, there's ways in contracting, I think, you can manage that in different ways. Where I'm not a big fan of just always going to the low, low, low guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, so it's like diving scores. It's better to throw the high out and the low out and look in the middle, because that's where the number is. So we would prefer that if you take that scenario of say, bidding five, if that low is too low, look sideways at that. Be careful about that. There's ways of managing contingency and so forth in your budget so that you don't get burned. But the last thing you want is a project delayed because the contractor wasn't capable of doing the takeoff correctly.
Right. When we go through this basic process, will you be coming back with one specific way we're going, or will you be coming back with options?
It kind of depends. I mean, the Fire Station 5 is a good example where they were pretty much thinking it was two-story, and, you know, as it evolved, it turned into other ones.
Okay.
So sometimes the problem, I think, presents itself cleanly, and everybody says, oh, that makes sense to me. And other times it's not so clean, and you need to go down two paths.
The charrette process.
I mean, that's fine from my perspective. Process. I think options are good.
Right.
And I would see where that would eliminate some.
Yeah.
Yeah, that process kind of helps you determine, and we did that on number 3. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of different options, mm-hmm. and we developed mm-hmm. them to a point and then showed them. And then it was obvious, this is much better.
But all of that sort of testing of theory happens in that early planning stage. And I encourage everybody to throw rocks at that as much as possible. And did we forget something? Did we do something and, you know, assume the wrong thing? Because once you get out of that piece into what we call the more conventional path, there should be some strong consensus that this is the right thing to do. And a budget that makes sense.
Okay, that's probably the answer to the next question, too, which is when you get down to the HVAC selection and a lot of that stuff being leads, requirements, or whatever, I guess are those things that the engineering firm just picks, or is that stuff that
absolutely
you would be discussing?
Not. You absolutely discuss okay. it. I can't design something that you can't maintain, okay. or you have to go, you know, to a specialized contractor in Wilmington to maintain. You know, usually something down this year you'd want, you know, the people down here to be able to maintain the system.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's so many ways to control comfort.
and mm-hmm. flexibility. You've got an existing building, existing system, but a new building with maybe the opportunity for a new system. So it might be we do one thing in one building, we do something different in the other.
Okay.
So okay. We're never locked into any particular
It'll all be discussed, and there's always trade-offs if you go with this or you go with that.
Right.
And everybody's got to buy in on it to know what they're getting.
Yeah. The real benefit of having your separate building is this building is going to be structurally hardened, adequate, elevated, as high performance as we can probably get. When you do renovation work, you're going to try to bring up the systems as much as you can. But an option could be replace the entire system. We had a 911 center where that was part of it. The 911 center went on the end of a public works building, and the end of the day, the whole system had to get upgraded. But we gave them the choice, and that's the choice they picked. So, you know, particularly in the existing building, I think you'll have differing options there, and you just have to pick what makes most sense for you.
Okay.
Cool.
A lot of good questions.
Yeah, great questions.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
All right. You guys are on the ball. I appreciate the thoughtful probe.
We appreciate the work you put into this.
No problem.
We'll sit down and figure this out.
Great.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back with you.
Thank you.
Well, if we get it wrong, the people that gave us the money.
So
okay. Never lose sight of anybody. Thank you, guys.
Thank you,
guys.
Thank you, John Schertzer. And how many counseling have you seen in it?
It's because they always have been working.
Oh, is that what it is? Well, now that you're down here, you can just stay.
Yeah, thank you.
The meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Old fire station. The hose was made of aluminum, and they had to hang it up so it dried.
Thank you very much, sir.